Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, July 8th, 2014. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Good afternoon, Alfred.
You got the July thing correct today, Melody.
Right today. See? It's like
changing the year. You know, I generally adjust to the new year by February or March. I start thinking it's 2014 after writing it's 2013. And I guess it's a little like that when the month changes from June to July. Takes a little time to catch up on it.
Well, how many times am I going to have to hear that, Alfred?
Well, I don't know. How many days are there? 30 days has September, April, June.
Uh-huh. You know, Al, when you make errors or mishaps or whatever on radio, you're just supposed to let it go by. You're not supposed
to. No. That takes the fun out of it.
Is that right?
That's exactly right.
All right. Well, let's see if we had any fun in the gold market today. It was an active day in trade from a low of 1312 to a high of 1325, and it is settling at 1319 on the New York spot price, down 130. Silver, same kind of action, 2082 on the low, 2129. Looking at 21.12 at the moment, down 3 cents. Platinum, up a dollar at 14.97, and palladium up two at $872. The USDX today is trading down slightly 0.07 at 80.17, with crude oil up 0.04 at 103.57. The paper markets today, yes, it fell a little bit, down 117 points, so it retreated a little bit from its recent high, 16,906. The NASDAQ was down 60, a little over 1.3% at 43.91, so that's the one that really took the hit today, and the S&P was only down 14 points at 1963. And I'll tell you what, the 10-year, it's yielding 2.56%, down 0.05, so that's kind of been, that doesn't know what it wants to do, but certainly it's hovering 2.60 at that level. So we have some news coming out today, and let me bring up that report. Consumers, Al, they increased their borrowing at a slower pace in May compared to the prior month. The Federal Reserve said that the overall credit rose by $19.6 billion in May, down from a gain of $26.1 billion in April. Where's all this bad weather? I mean, I don't know. That's a nice hefty number, $26 billion.
It was unseasonably unseasonable.
What happened in May? Was it, Mother's Day? No, that should have made the month better. So there was a modest increase, but certainly consumers are relying on debt to pay the tuition, to buy cars, and to shop. Total outstanding consumer debt is now approaching $3.2 trillion. Auto and student loans drove much of the gains in May, and they increased by a combined $17.8 billion. And, of course, that is a year-over-year rise of a little over 9%. Credit card debt rose by a slight $1.8 billion in May. That surged in April, and the increase in credit card debt over the past year has been about 2.5%. So those consumers out there are certainly relying on more debt to purchase all the trinkets that they buy. And, of course, as it mentioned, automobiles and...
Don't forget flat-screen TVs.
You would think that everybody and their brother would have a flat-screen TV by now.
Yeah, but I mean a big one. I mean a really big one. Everybody's got flat screen. I understand. That's all. That's flat screen is kind of passe in its own way. But the big ones, the giant ones. I mean, they really are something when you do. You get into some of the basketball games, for example. And you get some of the shots. And I mean, it is. It's almost like being in the game. I mean, some of it really is just remarkable, astonishing. I don't know, fascinating, pretty amazing.
Well, pretty soon you'll be able to have the hologram right in your living room, and it'll be like playing basketball with those guys.
Well, I mean, one of those, once they get those holograms going, it won't be a good thing for marriage and dating and the rest of this sort of thing. It'll be like, you know. I don't know. I'm just saying. Where are you going tonight? I have a date with my hologram.
Actually, I saw previews on a movie. It was called Her, and it was really kind of freaky. I mean, I didn't watch the movie. I just saw previews. But it's this guy who actually falls in love with this computer. Yeah.
Was it really the computer, or was it the flat screen monitor?
I don't know what it was. No, he took it with, you know, he would, you know, talk to her when he would be walking down the street. He'd have it on his phone, and he's walking and talking to this computer. Now, I don't know in the end if the computer, if there was a person behind it or not, but, I mean, it was kind of freaky, weird, you know, bizarre. I mean,
yeah, there's something wrong with that. I mean, if you're just talking to yourself, of course, well, that's normal. We all do that a little bit, but talking to your computer, that's a little bit crazy.
I mean, joking and having private moments, it's, I don't know.
Having a little quality time with your computer.
Computer.
Yeah.
Although I did see I pulled up one article in which there was a big video, and actually you had a choice where you could watch the video or read the transcript. And I thought, that is fantastic, because there's a lot of videos I don't watch because I hate watching these videos. I much prefer to read. And so I thought, hopefully that might be something a little more. We'll see more of that in the future, highly unlikely, but, you know, perhaps. And I know, Al, this doesn't have anything to do with economy. Maybe it does. But I was reading an article about crowdfunding.
Mm-hmm.
Heard of that?
Yeah.
I mean, what is wrong with people?
I don't know that that's a bad thing.
Well,
I think it's pretty interesting because it really allows people, if you get an idea, you go up on one of these crowdfunding outfits, and there are several different websites where you can get the, you can essentially apply for crowdfunding, and if the crowd likes your idea, they will support it, and you can round up money in order to finance businesses and inventions and one thing another.
But weddings and trips and vacations.
Well, I try anything. I understand that. I mean, there's some strange things going on with that. I don't know why anyone would want to fund. The only people I can think of that would fund. Now, you're not going to laugh at this, Melody, but.
What?
The only people that are going to fund somebody else's weddings are probably divorce attorneys. That would be just a guess, but I think that might be true.
I try to get in the mindset of the person that would actually donate to somebody that they have no idea who it is, what's going to happen to that money, how it's going to be invested. I would rather go to Vegas or buy a lottery ticket. I mean, it's just like, I don't get it. Not anything. It's for their own self-purpose.
You know, I think in any case, though, I still think it provides an amazing opportunity for people to directly invest in something they like. All right, and I'm not necessarily talking about someone else's marriage or their vacation or whatever, but certainly, you know, inventions, stocks, corporations, new businesses, one thing another like that. There's, you can eliminate a certain amount of the middleman in here, and there's an opportunity for people who have a good new idea to put it up there and see if people want to help you fund it. Now, I'm sure there's a lot of these people who try it and they don't get much of a response, but there are other people. I don't know. It's a little bit strange. It's a little bit unusual, but what it reminds me of, and I think I've told this story in the past on the program, a friend of mine back in the 1990s was buying books, and he was involved in legal reform studies and whatever, and on one occasion I helped him fill a pickup truck, filled up the whole bed of the pickup truck with law books from SMU Law Library when they were disposing of old books. He was buying the books for a buck a piece. Must have bought $300-$400, maybe more than that. I don't even know what he paid, but I helped him load up the bag. Well, in any case, he wound up purchasing an operations manual for the Federal Reserve. He went to an estate sale, and it was just up there, and the heirs were just selling everything. Some was a wealthy, you know, relatively wealthy guy died. And the heirs, all they wanted was the money to get down to the beach. All right? That's all they cared about. So they were simply selling his library. And this man had, in his library, he had a three-volume set, three-ring binders that comprised the operations manual for the Federal Reserve. And to this day, you can go see these manuals at your local Federal Reserve, you know, bank if you want to go in there. But they'll only let you look at the manuals for about a half hour. You can't make any notes. You can't take any pictures. You can study it for a half hour, and then you have to get out and make another appointment if you want more, and they'll let you back in a couple of months for another half hour and so on. He had this. This guy was a wheel, and he brought it home. Well, man who bought this stuff from the estate, Terry Lofton, he's passed on now. But Lofton read this, and he had a number of amazing finds, but one of them was that under this operations manual, the Federal Reserve policy was to only make loans to conventional energy manufacturers and distributors, oil, coal, and nuclear. There was no allowance for alternative energy like solar or you know, wind power and that sort of thing. And the result is that by refusing to lend money to those startup businesses, and this goes back, the manual might have been from the 1980s. Lofton got his hands on it in the early 1990s. The point was the Federal Reserve was controlling what technology, what energy technology was available to the people simply by determining what classes of energy providers they'd lend money to. So it wasn't easy for the alternative energy to fund itself. Well, today, I don't know what policy is at the Federal Reserve today, and it may, but the point is that people in positions of power can stifle new inventions simply by saying we're not going to lend any money on that. And this crowdfunding provides an opportunity for people to say, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. I'll lend $5 or $10 or whatever it is, or 50 cents. I'll send them something to help support them. And it's the kind of thing, even at 50 cents a hit. You know, if people throw in 50 cents, next thing you know, who knows? On the internet, you could have $20,000, $30,000, $50,000, whatever. So it's interesting.
It's just another sign that there's too much money in this kind of, people have too much money in their pockets, and you know.
That's a tough sale, Melody. Everybody who's listening right now thinks you have too much money in your pocket.
Well, you know what? When you're looking at what the consumers are buying, or cars, and we talk about computers and phones, and for idle money, for disposable funds, yeah, there's no one in this country is hungry as yet.
I will agree that other people may have too much money. But I will not
too much money in this country.
I will not agree that I have too much. Maybe they do, but I don't.
But Mark Faber, he is the editor of the Gloom, Boom, and Doom Report. He's waiting for the markets to break. He says the bubble may already be bursting. And he thinks that, he's been wrong in the sense that he's been expecting a correction since October 2011, when the S&P was at 1,074. He says, but we've gone up in a straight line without a larger correction than 11%. And he thinks we're just not going to have a correction, but we're going to be in a bear market. And he says some of the issues...
For equities.
Yes, for equities. Mm-hmm. And he says some of the issues, he says Thursday's, other than the big jobs number that was on Thursday that we had talked about, he says he doesn't believe the global economy is strengthening. He believes the global economy is weakening. And he says he believes that the weight on the markets, he says, I think that we may have in the White House a very poor president, and that may lead to some political issues in the U.S. domestically. We have numerous political issues to consider, and he says, again, much higher prices, and certainly he has a strong accent. But he's looking for a 30% drop in the S&P, and so we'll just have to see. And, of course, they always bring out those that think that the Dow and the S&P will certainly go higher. But, you know, when he talks about, you can just go to the European markets and their comments, and, you know, they're ready, and they've already commented on how much that they would throw into stimulus of whatever is needed. And an article came out today how the Europe remains at odds over whether governments should have more leeway to use borrowed money to turn on the stimulus taps in a bid to boost anemic economic growth levels. So that doesn't sound like things are getting better, at least in Europe.
No. It's not getting better anywhere, really. It's like 288,000 jobs, if I recall correctly, were allegedly created. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were, but there were 500,000 full-time jobs that were lost, all right? And they wound up creating they created 288,000 part-time jobs, and they're taking credit for that. And in fact, there was actually a loss, according to some reports. And, again, we've said a bunch of times, I understand the government has an obligation to maintain public confidence in the economy. That's the key to the whole thing. For example, it's key to the value of your currency. We have to have confidence in the dollar if we're going to use it to spend things, because it has no intrinsic value. Confidence becomes so important, government feels obligated to lie to us in order to maintain confidence. But there reaches a point where the lies become so obvious and persistent that they, in fact, detract from confidence. They make us more vulnerable to an economic recession, depression, whatever, than we might be if someone were telling us the truth. Part of the truth is it's time for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Everyone is afraid of pain. No one wants pain to rule over their life. And you don't want the negative side effects of aspirin, ibuprofen, or prescription drugs. They can lower immunity and cause dependency. Is there a safe alternative? I'm herbalist Wendy Wilson, and I prefer willow bark and meadowsweet herbs to control pain, fever, aches, and inflammation. God's herbs are good, and you won't be disappointed. Call Apothecary Herbs for pain or extra strength pain relief formula, toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International, 704-875-8010, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with our co-host, Melody Cederstrom. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
I just want to remind the listeners we're going to go through one more month of with each order. We're going to give you a free silver eagle. But you have to give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Every order gets a free Silver Eagle for the month of July. And everyone enjoys being able to make purchases and getting a one-ounce Silver Eagle. And I would just want to encourage everyone to visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for the weekly newsletter, American Survival. And we post specials there, and there's news there, and the radio programs are there. So it is a great – I get compliments on that website all the time. So it's a great little website to go to.
I'm just curious what's happened with the baseball Hall of Fame coin. You know, we talked about it before. I've mentioned to folks it's – the coin is fascinating because it's convex on one side and concave on the other. It's not just your typical flat coin. It's actually, it's interesting. I mean, it's a fascinating coin. And I'm just curious what's happened to sales or prices, or has there been any, you know, are they sold out? Are they, what's going, or do you know anything about them at this time?
Well, what's actually interesting, of course, they actually extended some of the coins into where some of the players have actually signed.
Yep.
The items. So yep. There is certainly a lot of interest. And a lot of these coins actually came out when there was a big promotion on the Baseball Hall of Fame. And so it was time to coincide with that. They only minted, I believe, on the initial production, like 400,000. I know the Minta has been sold out. We've been selling them here and there. Prices have remained pretty much the same. I think you'll see that peak in times of baseball, maybe during the World Series or, you know, various times of baseball functions and so forth. I think you'll see that spike. But I think there was a lot of interest in that coin because of the – I mean, it was interesting. It's very unique.
I doubt – I wonder if there is another example of a coin that is both convex on one side and concave on the other side.
No.
In world history.
No.
Anybody done this before? And I've never heard of such a thing. It doesn't, just because I haven't heard, doesn't prove anything. But
this is the first.
I think it is.
I know it is. This is the first. And yes, interest has been there. And they've also produced these coins in gold. So you can get
Is that right?
Yeah. So I think the U.S. Mint produced a coin that created an excitement, brought interest to the industry. And it was a good call for them. So, absolutely, we still have a few left. I haven't mentioned them lately, but we have a few left in inventory. So they can just give us a call at 1-800-375-4188.
I don't have. It's hard to predict what's going to happen, and I can't. I certainly don't have the gift of prophecy and so on. But that just looks to me like a coin that's going to appreciate in value significantly over time.
It will.
It won't necessarily happen the next 90 days or whatever, I get that. But nevertheless, it just, I mean, if you wanted to give a gift to your grandchild, for example, there's a way where you can hand this over and make sure the kid has it, but he can't sell it till he becomes an adult.
Well, Al,
I think he's going to sit back and say, look what grandpa gave me, look what grandma gave me.
Yep. This is certainly a neat coin to have. I've had a lot of fathers who purchased it for their boys because they're interested in baseball. But I also think it is a good investment. And I'm not a fan of just buying any commemorative coin to purchase a silver commemorative coin. I look at them individually to see if they match the suitability also of the buyer. But this is an interesting coin, and I think it will do quite well. I had a client call me today. I'm sure he's listening to the program. He had a dealer calling them, trying to sell Mint State 70 half-ounce Gold Eagles. Half-ounce, not a full-ounce, mind you. A half-ounce for $1,200 and like $25. And, of course, you know, the pitch was, oh, these are beautiful. These are part of the set. There's only so many amended and blah, 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 blah. I mean, certainly it sounded like a great pitch. That means you're paying over $2,400 for an ounce of gold in a Mint State 70 condition. I mean, it's like sometimes we just crack them out of the cases in order to supply other orders. I mean, there's no value on the modern issue coins to be certified. The only time I would purchase a modern issue certified gold coin is I have a complete set of the Silver Eagles from 1986 to current. And yes, I do have those in Mint State. But it's a set. There's reason behind it. It protects the coins as you're adding each year to the collection. And
it's a long-term investment.
It's a long-term investment. Yeah.
You're not going to see a dramatic change in the price of those coins over the course of the next 3 to 5 years. You might in others.
It's the set that makes it certified a value. But if you buy an individual, if you buy one Silver Eagle that is certified, what is the point? There's no point to it. So that was my...
Not at this time. Not at this time. There might be a lot of point to it for your grandson or your granddaughter.
100 years from now, maybe.
50 years, 25 years, hard to say. Name 20 years, maybe.
Nope.
You don't think
there's
so.
There's too many of them that are minted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless it was a year of a small mintage or there's a reason that they were destroyed. I mean, that's how the Silver Eagles were in 1996. The reason that has such high value was because that was the year they began to paint the Silver Eagles. You know, you see them all painted red, white, and blue. So a lot of them was purchased, taken off the market, painted, sold on a lot of these QVCs and so forth. And once they're painted, they're destroyed.
numismatically.
No,
they're not destroyed. I mean, they're still worth whatever they're worth on a spot value.
You know, the coin, my point out is the coin is destroyed. If it wasn't destroyed, then you'd have the same value on the regular silver eagles, but that's not true. Some of those 96 silver eagles sell for $50, $60, $70, $80. Mm-hmm. So, no, I mean, there's significant, and that's why you take care of your coins. You protect them. You don't buy them when they're all beat up, scratched up. That's why quality is important. That's why you don't clean your coins. And people don't understand this, and you know they try to save a dollar and they end up getting, you know, inferior product. Yes, you have an ounce of gold. Yes, you have an ounce of silver, but you can get a much higher return in the future if you keep your coins in great condition. And I've seen coins that are shipped to me when people sell them that just, you know, it's a little shocking. Because this is such valuable items. So take care of your items. Take care of your gold and silver. Ford, they issued 6 recalls of 100,000 vehicles for safety defects in North America. They don't say what the safety, I don't think they say what the safety defects are, but there was 6 separate recalls today. Of course, they're claiming no injuries or accidents or fires. But the largest recall of 92,000 vehicles affect the Ford Taurus, the Lincoln MKS, and the Police Interceptor sedans. Interesting. 2013-2014 Ford Flex, the MKT, the Lincolns, their crossovers, the Edge crossover, and the MKX. So, again, they're coming out. I think they, you know, if they have recalls, well, these companies should be fined, I think.
Well, they're paying a big price. I don't agree that they should be fined on the recalls. They may make some stupid judgments in terms of trying to produce a part and save a nickel or a dime on the part, and it winds up being it's a weakened part, and it's more prone to trouble. And if you have that trouble, then the next sound you hear is knock, 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 here comes a lawyer, right? And that's plenty of fine for most of these people. Couple dollar part blows up, breaks, whatever. And the next sound you hear is a lawsuit for $1 million. That gets their attention.
But that doesn't eliminate future problems.
Yeah, it does. It teaches them a lesson. It slaps their wrists pretty hard.
I don't think so. Because
it depends on the courts. But if the courts will back it up and they say, yeah, this is wrong. You did something wrong here. Somebody got hurt. Somebody was damaged. You know, I don't think we need to throw a fine on top of it, in part. You know, if I were Ford Motors and I had the option to merely be fined if I produce a defective part.
Oh, they should be both.
Fined and subject to civil suit.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'd take the fine every time. Because the fine is something you can understand, you can control, and the accountants, they can go ahead and calculate, well, given the size of the fine, it's X number of dollars, and if we can save 2X by using an inferior part, we're ahead on the deal. You know,
I think
they've got to face the uncertainty of the civil suit.
And what's wrong with someone being held accountable for it?
Well, I'm just saying that there's a lot of accountability right now, or we wouldn't see Ford recalling 100,000 vehicles. We wouldn't see General Motors. How many did they recall? Did I hear 8 million?
More than that.
I mean, that's accountability. It costs some money. I guarantee that's a devastating blow.
Well, yeah, that could put GM in bankruptcy.
Yeah, I get that.
I mean, it's over 20 million, I think, the total recall. I'm not sure, but it's a little higher.
I don't remember, but millions, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. And all by itself, it costs money. Somebody's paying for that, and it's not... It's not the taxpayers, and it's not the guy that owns the vehicle. So it's the dealers and or Ford Motors and or their insurance companies. But it's a big, heavy. It's a heavy penalty.
I think with GM, someone should be held accountable. They really should be.
Well, what they should be held accountable for is not the defective part per se, because nobody's going to make a perfect automobile, and you're going to run into this from time to time. But they should be held accountable for knowing there was a defective part, and refusing to make the correction once that knowledge was apparent. They let people die. Right? Ford doesn't put parts together, use parts where they know, well, this is going to kill 100 people. But we'll do it anyway because we can save a little money. They're not, they don't, the part isn't selected on that basis. They expect their vehicles will work properly. Any car dealer does. But once they know that they've made a mistake and they fail to correct it, now you have criminal liability, in my opinion.
But so it'll be fun to see how these unfold. But
fun for some people, won't be fun for Ford, won't be fun for General Motors. But in any case.
But again, it's the way people accept inferior products anymore. I mean, it's almost to the point where, you know, what can you do about it? You can go to purchase a different automobile, but then what are the quality issues? And, you know, I don't hear recalls to the degree of some of these foreign vehicles. Yes, they do have them, and I know Toyota had a big problem. So, yes, they do get them, but not to the consistency of what we hear coming out of Ford and GM.
Are you suggesting that the government is intentionally going after American manufacturers?
No.
They're just not going after
I'm not quite sure who has the better quality controls. I was this is back in the 80s. I know things have changed, but I was told by, you know,
I think it's pretty hard to find a dealer that a manufacturer of automobiles that has poor quality control. Now, you might see that in some of the Chinese manufacturers where they're just kind of getting started. But generally speaking, you're going to see pretty good quality control, but there's bound to be mistakes. You know, there are mistakes, and there's, you know.
In the early years with Japan, I was told, and this really doesn't have, we ought to move on, but their quality control was if someone knew there was a problem in the assembly line, they were able to shut it down at any time, at that point in time. Whereas the U.S. manufacturing plants, if they found something wrong with the part or the assembly line, they couldn't shut it down. They had to actually produce and continue to a certain point in time. They weren't able, the plants were not, or the assembly lines were unable to be shut down immediately, and this comes directly from mechanics and managers and everything from Nissan. I mean, and there's no reason to doubt what they were saying. But
no, I don't doubt what they're saying, but you're also dealing with a different quality laborer. I'm going to bet that if the employees in Japan, for example, they're not going to shut that line down unless they see something is truly wrong.
But they were able to shut it down, so you didn't have...
No, I get that. But they would use that power very responsibly. You lay all that power into some of the American factories, there are unions that will be shutting the line down every 5 minutes just in order to, as a device. They'll say, well, if you see something wrong, you get to blow the whistle on it. Well, they start doing that once a day, and next thing you know, you either have to give them a raise or shut the plant down. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
American unions, I don't think, have been as responsible as the employees of Japan. It's a cultural thing. It's not a fault of the corporations per se, and I'm no fan of corporations, but, you know, I think that might be, I don't know if that's true, but it might be part of the explanation as to why American corporations and or law would not allow the guy on the line to just shut it down anytime he feels like having a smoke break. So
it's going to be interesting to see the meetings. We're going into break here, but the meetings between the U.S. and China begin this evening, and there's going to be a lot of focus on the valuation of China's currency and claims by American companies of unfair market restrictions in China. There's also going to be discussions that are including the threat posed by the nuclear-armed North Korea. So we'll see whatever comes out. And we also talked about the trade agreements that they're looking to expand on that. And so there's going to be several days with the Obama administration focused on China instead of focusing on what's happening at our borders. So we'll be talking about that after the break.
All right, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and we'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Well, headlines right now. You have rocket hits Jerusalem. Israel opens public bomb shelters. Sirens sound. And rocket attacks on Tel Aviv. Israel is calling up 40,000 troops as tensions mount. Launches military campaign against Gaza. And so, is this it, Al?
I don't think so, but it is kind of interesting because Israel has been kind of
itching,
low-key for the past couple of months. You haven't heard much about Israel. I haven't, at least. The war is running between the two major branches of the Muslim faith, the Sunnis versus the Shiites over in Syria and Iraq, and likely to spread to other places. And Israel has just kind of kept a low profile, said, don't mess with them. They're going to fight with each other. Let them do it. And now I've been wondering what's going on at Israel. And now we see someone is trying to heat this thing up again with Israel rather than the Sunni and the Shiites. Instead of fighting Muslim against Muslim, we are now having Muslims against Jewish people again. So, I don't know. It's just interesting. You wonder what motivates these politics and who decided it's time. Let's go attack Israel a little bit. You know, so we're back at it. The Middle East, though, will never be stable for long. I don't expect to see stability in the Middle East in the balance of my life. In fact, I don't think anyone could really predict that the Middle East is going to stabilize in the next 50 years unless there is a single religion that covers the whole Middle East. Maybe Shia, maybe Sunni, maybe Jewish. I certainly don't expect that last possibility, but as long as there are multiple religions and lots of oil, And people who are inbred to the point where they are halfway nuts to begin with, you're not going to see the Middle East calm down.
Well, when you see those types of headlines and you see that being stirred up along with everything else going on over there, it certainly gives you time to pause and to, all the signs are there, Al. I mean, it's just, these things are not going to go away.
None.
They're only going to become bigger, more challenging, and somebody, one of these days, will lose it, and we will be where we don't want to be. So, like you don't want to be on the border of the U.S. Today, Obama.
Well, some people do, some people don't. I don't know.
Obama's requesting $3.7 billion to deal with the children crossing the southern borders illegally. So, I think if anything might upset the people of this country, it might be seeing that money going to these folks coming across the border because they see it as jobs perhaps being lost. So maybe.
Jobs
maybe.
Being lost, taxes being raised,
yep.
Debt increasing. You know, and people are sitting back and saying this is a humanitarian crisis and we've got to take care of these children. I get that. I understand that. And the problem is not the children coming across the border, however, and from my perspective. It's not the problem, you know, as much as I might rant about illegal aliens from time to time. That's not really the problem. The problem is the treasonous whores in the cat house on the Potomac who will not defend our borders. That's the problem. I don't blame these kids for coming in here. I don't blame them for trying to get into this country, but I do blame Congress and the White House and the United States courts for failing to protect our borders. It should be an automatic that we will secure our borders and protect the American people, and nobody's coming into this country except legally. And instead, we get arguments about humanity and one thing and another that are interesting, but they do not defeat the fundamental problem. They don't solve the fundamental. They don't even address the fundamental problem.
They
say this is about humanity. No, it's about whether or not our government will protect our own borders. And if it can't, why not? We've got the money to invade Afghanistan. We've got the money to invade Iraq. We've got the money to fool around in Syria and Libya and God knows where else in the world, but we don't have the money to protect our own borders. That's outrageous. It's untenable, it's unjustifiable, and the problem's not the illegal aliens, it's not the children, it's the clowns in Congress. That's the problem.
What I don't understand, some of this money would help Central American countries repatriate the border crossers and send them back from the U.S. Well, why don't they pay for it? Why do we have to pay for it?
Well, I wrote an article for last week or the week before, I don't remember, I think it was last week, so I'm not sure. American Survival, and I wrote an article there where I just proposed, look, when the illegals come into this country, mm-hmm. First thing you do is repatriate them to their proper country. Ask them, where are you from? And if they're from Honduras, then take them to the Honduras embassies in this country. And when the Honduras embassies gets tired of feeding, clothing, and housing 100 kids or 1,000 kids in their embassy, then let the Honduras embassy ship the Honduran children by air, boat, or however they want to move them from here back to wherever they came from in Honduras. And the same thing with the Mexican kids. Move them into the Mexican embassies and make sure that nobody leaves that embassy. We're not going to just... Well, they may have to put some guards on there and make sure that there's no one leaving the embassy that's not a diplomat or an employee of the embassy. And they can feed them and clothe them and house them at their costs. And if we found a child, if you took a trip to France, for example, and you take your children with you, you and your spouse and three kids, and you take a vacation to France, and won't it be wonderful? And one of the kids is 5 years old, wanders off someplace. Well, what would you want the French authorities to do with the child? Even if the kid doesn't know how to get his way back to wherever, whatever hotel you're in and whatever, the kid can at least say, I'm coming from the United States of America. And what should the French police do? Throw the kid in some sort of a jail, throw him in some kind of a concentration camp, or take them to the American embassy. And I make a bet that virtually everyone's, well, yeah, that's a thing, and let the embassy will find the mom and dad. They'll figure it out. We should do the same thing. That's the humane way to solve this problem. We just give the kids back to their country, which includes these little patches of land where we establish embassies from foreign countries. Let them take care of them.
Sounds like a plan to me.
Yeah, it sounds like a good plan to me. It's the sort of thing, oh, yeah, send all you want. Yeah, bring them all up here. We don't care. We're going to dump them in your embassy. We're going to make sure they don't get out unless you are taking them to an airport where they can ride first class. Give these kids a big, give them a little surprise. Give them a special trip on, they can fly first class on a 747 back to Mexico City or wherever it is they came from. Only you folks who don't care enough about your children to keep them at home, you're going to pay for the airfare, not us.
A list of the world's 100 largest banks is out, and the United States has only one representative in the top 10, and that is J.P. Morgan Chase at number 6. Of course, China has 4 of the top 10 slots, and this is the United States did have 11 representatives in the top 100. And but what's interesting is because of the way they rate internationally, the International Financial Reporting Standards, they require banks to include the gross amount of derivative assets on their balance sheets. So that's why J.P. Morgan Chase was number 6. Now,
you mean the volume of derivatives?
Their assets, right. They
that makes
total assets. The largest 4 banks report total assets under the International Financial Reporting Standards. So they have to include the gross amount of derivative assets on their balance sheets. But in contrast, here in the States, the banks that report under the U.S. generally accepted accounting principles, they report the net amount of derivatives. So if you use the net versus the gross, Chase would be number 1. So that is that's what kind of difference it makes, whether you report the way the world reports or by the standards under the U.S.
I'll tell you one other thing that it suggests to me. I don't know how many of these banks in the top 10 from the list you're actually top 100, and you're talking about the top 10 out of the top 100. If a determining factor for all of those banks is the sum of their derivatives, is that true?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is correct.
Then the banks at the top of the list are arguably the least stable, the most vulnerable. They're stacked up with something, and we're saying, oh, my gosh, they must be rich. They've got, what, $500 billion in derivatives, $800 billion in derivatives or whatever. Say, gosh, they got to be rich. No, they're not. They are in a position where the whole thing is liable to blow up in their face at any moment, and the people at the top of the list apparently have more derivatives than the people at the bottom of the list. So if you're looking for a reliable bank, maybe you want to find one at the bottom of the list rather than at the top.
Well, the top one is the topping the list is Industrial and Commercial Bank of China with $3.174 trillion in assets. And it is followed by the $2.758 trillion asset HSBC Holdings, of course, of the United Kingdom. Number 3 was China Construction Bank. And actually, China has 4 of the top 10 slots. So Bank of America was listed, their ranking was number 12. Citigroup was number 14. And Europe as a whole and Russia have 45 of the top 100 banks. Just interesting.
Yeah, it is. There was a time when I was a kid, top 10 banks in the world, I'll bet you that at least 8 or 9 of them were here in the United States, and it might have been all 10. Now it's kind of an also-ran situation but we are not predominant. We were the richest country on earth. We were the world's number one creditor. We loaned money to all the rest of the world, and we were running hot. We were running prosperous. The world was good for the American people. And now we're the world's biggest debtor. We have gone in my lifetime from the world's biggest creditor to the world's biggest debtor. And it is not a change that will serve us well. We're going to pay a price for it. Got an article here from the Associated Press. And the headline is, IMF chief hints at reduction in growth forecasts. The chief of the International Monetary Fund predicts that the global economy will improve over the next 18 months. Yay! But says that the growth might not be as fast as previously expected. Boo! All right. This reminds me, this is IMF Managing Director Christine Lagarde. She says that the investment remains weak, and she says that investment remains weak and that the recovery in the United States hinges on, one, the ability of the Federal Reserve to gradually reduce stimulus measures, okay, and two, on political leaders agreeing on a fiscal plan. All right? So, Melody, what are the odds, the chances, the likelihood that the political leaders in Washington are going to agree on a fiscal plan about what to do for lunch, let alone how to run the country?
Well, I'll tell you what, with that alone, if people are not buying gold and silver by the fistfuls, yeah, they got to be out of their minds.
And it starts out where they say it's going to grow in the next 18 months, but maybe not as fast as previously expected. The IMF is the one that expected first quarter in the United States to come up to first quarter growth to average out something like it was close to 3% per year for the first quarter, and then it turned out it was almost 3% per year in the most recent report. My point is that the IMF's predictions, you know, this is like buying one of those racing tips down at the horse track. Maybe not all that valuable. Interesting, but maybe not all that reliable. We're out of time, folks. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
Bye.